Hi, and welcome to the School Health Educators Podcast, where we discuss health education and how to best teach health ed in the K-12 setting. Hello, and welcome to the School Health Educators Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Reichel. Today's episode is focusing on ethics. And actually, we're going to have two episodes on ethics, one focusing on professional ethics or ethics in the profession. The other one's going to focus on personal ethics or ethics pertaining to how we live our lives. To help discuss this topic, I asked for a graduate student who is now a friend of mine to join in, and his name is Mr. Aaron Coleman. So, hi, Aaron. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Excited to discuss this topic, but also excited to spend time with you and delving on how we could, you know, make this bigger and just better ways to assist people and our colleagues.
I hear you. And I got to do a shout out. Like I said, Aaron is a former grad student from when I was working at Hofstra University as an adjunct instructor. And it's really neat that Aaron was in the grad level course for, I think, drug education or something like that. And we are an example of, even though it was teacher-student, like that type of relationship, we created a professional bond that many years later, we could do projects together, including talking about this topic. Aaron and I did present this at a national SHAPE conference, as well as the New York State AFERD conference in the fall of 2023. So it's neat to do projects with former students. If you are a former student of mine, connect with me if you want to get involved in some projects. I'd love to see you again or work with you. Aaron, do you mind telling us a little bit about your background?
Sure, absolutely. So I have been teaching for the past 14 years. I have my undergrad in physical education, a master's in health education, also a master's in administration education. I'm currently going for my doctorate in education as well. I am currently the director of athletics and arts at a charter school in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. You know, this is actually my second career. Before this, I was in working with professional sports, also in a nonprofit sector, which is why I love this topic of ethics, because it applies to so many different things. I think every job I've held or environment I've been into, ethics has been a very important topic. And, you know, it's ever evolving as new things are getting introduced, whether it be social media or all the things that are happening with phones. It's always something that should be discussed and on the forefront. So I'm happy that I am blessed enough to still work with educators such as yourself and little ones as well, and potential educators. So we can just get them to a place where they feel comfortable in their own skins in whatever environment or workplace they should enter.
Thanks so much for telling us some of your background. And I'm so excited about talking about the topic. Basically, what Aaron and I did was we put together some scenarios that are of importance for us to make people think that are listening in. And this is what we've presented on in the past. We can present to the future. If you ever want to have us talk to like teachers or administrators or something, you know, get in touch with us. But the first episode will be focusing on professional ethics. And I am recording this through a video. So if you'd like to see some of the stuff we're talking about, watch this on the YouTube channel through the School Health Educators Podcast YouTube channel. So I'm going to start showing the slide. Our aim or guiding question, whatever your district refers to, basically our aim for this conversation, as well as the next episode, is how can you best remain ethical in challenging situations? So that's the question that at the end, when we go through these situations, you know, think about what's the best thing to do. So just a reminder that professional ethics are those things that deal in the workplace, and it's the right versus wrong kind of situation. So these situations can be of the professional ethics deals with right and wrong in one's personal life. And that's what the next episode is going to be on. So for professional ethics, what we're going to do is read over a situation and then provide four different possible responses that we created. I chose to keep this one up. Eric, I don't know if you mind reading it, and then I can talk a little bit about why I chose this one.
Absolutely. Allison's about to teach her 10th grade wellness class when one of her students, Lori, walks in late. The student knocks into different desks as she goes to sit in her chair. Upon sitting down, Allison notices Lori's eyes are red and she has a weird smell. What should Allison do?
So the choices that we have on here is A, teach the lesson and then check in with the student after class. B, ask the student, Lori, are you high or drunk? C, let the whole class go and talk with the student. They've been working diligently all semester, all quarter, and could use a period off. Allison can then find out what is going on with Lori. Or D, tell Lori to go to the nurse. And what's interesting is I've done this with future teachers, and they have to stand in different corners of the room for their answer. Erin, in your eyes, what would you say you definitely do not do? Definitely not.
I definitely am not doing B, which is ask the student, Lori, are you high or are you drunk? For a number of reasons. Number one, you're making an accusation, which we should never do with students, especially when it comes to an audience. So all of her peers are around. All of her peers are hearing that. This is something where, for years to come, her peers could make fun of her, put her down. She might have issues in her personal life with family members who might do drugs, including alcohol. So this could hit a nerve. What we are here to do as teachers is to educate, but not to blame, put down, or make fun of our students or put them in a position where other people can do the same. So by accusing her of doing that, her reaction is not going to be good. And the reaction of her peers is not going to make the situation any better. So I would definitely not do B.
And the other thing is, we have no right to diagnose someone. I'm not a medical professional. And we don't know if maybe they're having a reaction to something they ate, drank, a medicine that a doctor gave them. Maybe they have an illness. We have no idea what's going on. And that right there, if you accuse a student, that could be a lawsuit for your school district.
100%. And usually when in a situation like that, once the parents find out, it blows the situation up to a level where, you could, as that educator, you could lose your job immediately. So it's about, again, being there for the student as opposed to making them the show at that point.
Now, the option about letting the whole class go, as a person who now works at the university setting, we have that flexibility. I'm not legally needing to stay with the students because they're adults. I have to still make sure I'm ethical in the classroom. Yet in the K-12 setting, you can't just dismiss your student. Is that how it works at your school? Like, you can't just say, yeah, just leave.
That is how it works. Number one, that is a safety concern. Number two, where are the students going? What are they doing? Are they going to be disruptive to other classes? In order to do that, there's a process. You have to contact an administrator. The administrator is going to come. They're going to ask you why. Then they have to find someone else to take over the class. And then they have to find space for those students. And not only that, if they should go to another space and there is a teacher that is with them, at this point, what are they doing? Are they going to continue on with the content that you were teaching? Does this teacher have to find something else for them to do? So there's a long process with that. So we're not allowed to say, okay, class dismissed. We have to keep them there until the allotted time.
And which you just made me think, like, for the answer A, teach the lesson and then check in with the student after class. We don't want to wait until the after class. We don't want to do that. So it is a weird situation. But what do we do? We don't want to embarrass the student, and ask the question. Again, that could be a legal issue. We can't let the kids go. We want to check in with the student. And I'm going to be very honest, when I created the answers for this one, I didn't make a definite answer because I wanted people to think of all of these are not necessarily the best answer. So I will say, to me, the best answer of everything is D, about getting the nurse involved. Yet I wouldn't send Lori to the nurse because I don't know if she's having a condition, she might fall in the hallway and get hurt. So I've actually said to students or future teachers, I've said, why not send somebody to go get the nurse for the student? Sometimes I know in elementary school, the student's feeling ill, we haven't had like a partner that takes them to the nurse, but we need to get the nurse involved here. And this actually, there was a student after school one day that was acting a little strange when I was doing, I don't know what it was called. It was a sports team and I was there to like to be a chaperone or something. And the student wasn't herself. And I said to the student, are you okay? You know, are you okay? I'm concerned about you. No accusations. I don't know what's going on. And I did get in touch with one of her parental units who thanked me up and down, because something was off with her daughter and she immediately came and picked up her daughter. And then I had to fill out a paperwork to say, this is what happened. And I think it was on a Friday. So the next week, the nurse did come and check in with me to say, you know, what do you think was going on? And my answer was, I don't know, but this is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's another situation. And the situation is that Emma is newly hired in school district implementing an accident-only health education program. A student in her SAD club asks Ms. Emma to talk to her after the meeting. The student needs advice about what form of birth control is best to prevent STD or STI transmission and pregnancy. The student shares that she's planning on having sex with her partner. What should Emma do? A, avoid talking to the student. B, not talk to the student, yet give the student health education pamphlets on birth control from a local clinic. C, inform the guidance counselor of the situation. Or D, talk with the student about different birth control options existing for teenagers. And I'm going to say again, this person was hired in an abstinence-only health education program. So, Aaron, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, this is a tough situation. And when we're talking about teachers who are brand new to the profession, like us veteran teachers, they want to help the students. They want to be there for the students. Obviously, this is a student that is in need. That being said, they also have to remember the school that they work for. And if it's an absence-only health education program, then that makes things a little bit challenging. So one of the first things that they need to think about and find out is, what are they allowed to do? We could make the assumption that a scenario like this has happened in the past before that teacher was hired. They probably had other students who have experienced this. So one of the most important things is to go to trusted peers within the school to ask their opinions. And the first one would be the department head. So who is that teacher's supervisor? They should go talk to them and say, this is what's happening right now. You know, what have we experienced in the past? What have you guys done in the past? What am I allowed to do as an educator? And what am I not allowed to do? Because one of the things that that teacher does not want to do is they do not want to put themselves in a position where they're going to lose their job. At that point, they're not going to be able to be there for the student and support the student. So I think that's the first thing they need to do, is to talk to someone within the school, preferably their supervisor, to say, hey, in this situation, what happens? What am I allowed to do? What is the school allowed to do? What are the supports that we have in place, or their supports that we might be able to provide the parents to help out the student? What are your thoughts?
Well, that aligns to like going to the guidance counselor, in which I could tweet that answer to go to your director. I totally agree with that. Tell your director that you're being approached. I will say I've heard from some future teachers who are extremely passionate about helping young people. Like, that's why we get into the field. And they believe it's their business or their, I don't know if it's right, but they want to provide the information. So they would pick talk with a student about different birth control options. And I ask them to pause and go, wait a minute, this is not your district. You are working within a district that has a team. And if you choose to do this, you can lose your job. You can, you might be written up. Yet we need you to talk to somebody, like what Aaron said, go and talk to an administrator about something. The whole thing about even giving pamphlet to students, a student, and you might say, well, I connect with the students. They seem to always come to me with questions or I help them out. Even the act of giving a pamphlet can have an administrator question you. You might have an issue at your job because it's accidents only, accidents only. So I totally agree with you, Aaron. Go to a director. I would change that fee to say inform the guidance counselor or your director and ask for guidance. I am going to say my little side trick, though, that I've used in the past or would use because I did start my career in working in the Catholic school system. Not that this came up that often because I worked up until grades 8. I was in one of the elementary K through 8 schools. Yet what I would say to students is, you know, I want to remind you, I was hired in this district. I'm so thankful that you came to ask me a question. I am a reliable resource. At the same time, I was told abstinence only. And at this point, I can't provide an answer. Is there, because it can affect my job. Mm-hmm. And usually I create relationships with students where if we have that professional distance, but they realize they want to keep me around because I'm a resource for them. I would say to them though, okay, so I can't answer the question yet. Is there a resource, another resource we believe you can go to? And usually students will be like, oh, wait a minute, there is something. So what do you think about that? Is that more like a safer thing potentially somebody might do if they don't have access to the guidance counselor or their director?
I think that's a great idea because there are so many resources out there and sometimes our students already know about them. As soon as you use the word resource, a number of things might pop into their head, whether it be a local clinic, whether it be a family friend or another teacher, whether it be maybe looking into something online. And I think that can help them just to get the creative juices flowing that there are other, you know, formats out there for them to get the information. One of the things I like to tell new teachers is your goal is to positively affect as many students as possible. If you should lose your job, you are not going to achieve your goal. You know, there are students that do have issues and we want to help them and you're going to keep on encountering that, but we are trying to positively affect the largest amount possible. So if you should, you know, go against your school or the organization's wishes and maybe hand them the pamphlet and then you lose your job, well, at this point, you're not helping out all the other students who might need you, who might need someone to, you know, just answer questions or be there for them. So Lori, I love the fact of you just using that word resources because, you know, kids, by hearing that, something will get going and they'll know there are other ways that they could get the information. I think the same thing goes for adults. I mean, we're talking about ethics, you know, personal and professional. Just as, you know, there are just as many resources out there for the youth as they are for adults as well, if they take the time to look and to find them.
And the national standard number 3 is about teaching young people about how to access reliable resources. So if you've taught in a skill-based health education classroom, if you've taught them how to access reliable resources, they have the skills to apply to any.
Absolutely.
And I will say, I know some people are really passionate. Well, they better listen to me. I know better, or I know comprehensive sex ed. I'm going to ask you to take a pause for somebody that has that passion. Take a pause. And this is what I ask you to do, like Aaron said. You know, follow the policy. We want you to be there for the kids. Let the school people get to know you. Let them get to see that you are following what you're asked to do. You know, you can jot down how many students approach you. Don't put down their names in case somebody else gets a list of that, you know, gets your notes. And get the personnel, the administrators, the parents to trust you. Because once they trust you, then you're able to make positive change for your students.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that we're talking about is relationship building. You're not only building relationships with your students, but you're doing that with your colleagues. You're doing that with the administration. And bringing them this data, which is really important, is going to help them make a decision that hopefully will better help these students. One of the things that I learned, I think it was within my second master's, is one of my professors told me, they said, no one cares about what you think. And they told that to the entire class, and we all froze. We're like, well, why not? Why don't they care about what we think? And they said they care about the data. So, Laura, I love what you just said, because what you're doing is you're taking data and you're bringing it to them, as opposed to saying, I think the kids should be able to learn about this. You're saying, I have data that states that this many students are consistently asking about these subjects and need these supports. That's what my data is showing. So the reason I'm coming to you is so we together can find a solution. And as an administrator, we appreciate that, because now it's not just going off feeling, it's going off pure data on what our students, not just your students, their students as well, what our students need in order to be successful.
Ah, that's fantastic. And they can also refer to youth-based behavior surveys, if it's done locally or in the state, to show what's going on. It's perfect. Love that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
We have one more situation left for professional ethics. And Aaron, do you want to take over here?
Absolutely. Bob oversees the PE department at a high school. The department consists of 5 PE teachers, 3 being men and 2 are women. During a department meeting, Bob requested that everyone demonstrate their entrance routines for their classes. Jane, a newly hired veteran teacher, refused to take part in the exercise, stating that this is beneath me. Bob informed her that everyone needed to participate in order to learn and improve as a team. Jane states that she did not appreciate how Bob spoke to her, accused him of being a sexist, and stormed out the room. What should Bob do? A, ignore it. He knows he did nothing wrong. B, follow Jane out of the room to finish the conversation. C, schedule a meeting with the vice principal to discuss the situation. Or D, file a formal complaint against Jane for her accusation. Lori, what do you think? What would you do? If you were Bob, if you were in Bob's shoes, what would you do?
Now, those of you that don't know this about me, I do have an administrative certificate in the state of New York, and I did oversee a health and physical department for a couple of years in New York. So I know that administrator hat, you have to be ethical, you have to do what's best. And I would say right here, I wouldn't ignore it. I would not ignore it at all. You do need to, if I say cover your butt, BYB, I would get a third person involved. I wouldn't follow. I know some of us want to resolve things. We might follow the person out of the room to finish. The whole thing of having a third person present is really important to me, because they can be a witness. And sometimes in a situation like this, people just make you really angry and they need to calm down and then to come back and have a meeting. So there's more than the chief people involved. That's my thought.
I 100% agree with you. I think, when we're looking at adults have emotions, likes, dislikes, just like our students. And there are sometimes our students and adults just need time to breathe and to think. And then when you get into a situation like this, or, something like this should happen to you, again, it's really important to have someone outside looking in be there. To whether it be mediate, or most importantly, to ask someone's advice. If you are a teacher at that school or you're an administrator in that school, you want to make sure when any accusation, and this could be something like this, this could be something smaller, this could be something bigger, it needs to be documented. And then your supervisor or the person who is in charge needs to know about this, because whether you think you're right or whether you think you're wrong, this subject is going to come up. That person might go and tell other colleagues of yours. They might go and tell the same supervisor that you're going to talk, you know, you're going to go speak with about this. So it's really important that you document everything that happened in that situation and to have an open and honest conversation with your supervisor. And at that point, they'll be able to guide you on what you should do from there. Most likely, it's going to be them taking charge, them going and speaking with the other individual, and then hopefully later bringing the both of you together. But if it is an accusation, then again, it's really important to document and get someone else involved. And again, that would be someone who is the supervisor to both you and the other individual.
I know, like, when you're an administrator and you just were teaching, and I went from another school district and then I became an administrator, and the physical education staff, they were not used to having somebody looking at what was being taught, because they had an athletic director who oversaw, I think it was like 150 teams plus physical education and health education, which went by about 50 staff members or teachers. And it was a lot. It was a huge job. So they separated the job. I came in and they're like, oh, wait. So there was a little bit of pushback. And as an administrator, you have to be as consistent as possible, professional as possible. And I love what you say about documenting. Put it down, even if you just need to journal it, to be like, you know what? I'm so angry at Aaron and blah, 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 blah. Great. Put it down. Process it. Because maybe you were having a not so great day and maybe you said something a little snarky in which you might have to apologize. You know, like there's different sides to the stories, but cover your butt.
Absolutely. And along with journaling it, it's really important to do it immediately. Even though at that point you might be feeling a certain way, you might feel offended, you might feel attacked, it's important that you have not only the specific information, but the correct information. And if you take time and go home, fall asleep, and then decide to do it, you might forget some important details. So it's really important just to take that time, document it, be as specific as possible. So again, you have a record of it. So again, when you do go and talk to the supervisor, and they might be busy, they might not have time to see you at that point, but at least if you email it and you have everything detailed, that's another way just to CYB.
So if we go to our aim or guiding question of how can you best remain ethical in challenging situations, how would you summarize that, Aaron?
Well, I think one of the main things, we have a lot of great examples on here, but one of the main things I think you need to remember is why you got in the profession. And if you're in the profession to help and support students, you need to be there. You need to be ethical because you need to teach them how to do the right things. So if you should encounter a situation, as we've discussed, CYB, covering your butt. So we're talking about keep a log of incidents and interactions. Always, always save emails, save text messages. If you're having interactions with these people, these need to be documented. You could take screenshots. That's very easy. Inform your supervisor or HR representative. I always like to say, when in doubt, seek somebody out. If you don't feel comfortable at first going to a supervisor or your HR representative, there's nothing wrong with contacting a mentor, a trusted colleague, just to have that first conversation, that initial conversation. Sometimes if you're in your feelings or if you're revved up, you might need someone just to calm you down before you talk to your supervisor and HR representative. There's nothing wrong to that. I've already mentioned reaching out to a mentor or a colleague. Review the state laws on the subject. Both Lori and I work in the lovely state of New York, but the laws here and the laws and stipulations here are completely different in other states. They're complete. What we're expected to do here and we're allowed to teach here is different here in New York than Florida. They're vastly different. So you want to make sure that you're checking the laws, which is something you should do immediately. As soon as you get a job at any school, you should be checking out the state laws, the district laws. You should be checking out all the rules and regulations for that specific school. That is very important. And in doing that, after you have reviewed all that, at that point, talk to your supervisor, talk to your colleagues, write down questions. Because there's so much information, some of it can be confusing. And all the information that they're giving you, all those guidelines, they have to be infused in your lessons. They have to be infused on not only what you teach, but how you teach and how you present it. So before you even start, have all this information down, ask as many questions as possible. And this is something that needs to be ongoing. So if you decide, you know what, I'm going to switch this unit up. This just happened in the news. I really want to cover it with my kids because it's going to be great. That's amazing. Put together a lesson, send it to your supervisor. Ask them their thoughts, ask them their feelings. Make sure that when you go in, you have the support of the stakeholders that are there to help support you.
We're supposed to be working as a team in schools, like what you just said, and we're supposed to. So it's not like I'm hired, like I'm newer to Cortland. I was teaching in the Midwest at the university level, came back to New York, and I know I have to create these relationships where people can trust me. And that's what you're, you know, like, I have to look at everything, all the rules and everything. And it's tiring, but do what's best for the profession, because you do represent us in the field. And you have people that are listening here. You represent all of us in the field, and we want to make sure that we're perceived as positively as possible. And I'm going to add one other thing that we don't have on that list, and that is take a breath. Because if you didn't mess up, tell a supervisor as soon as you can that I made a mistake. Because that's the other thing. We are human. We're doing the best we can. But if we slipped up and try to hide it, that's where it seems like things can get deeper and deeper. It's not going to clear things up. So please take a pause. But that concludes this first part talking about ethics, again, professional ethics, like the rights and the wrongs at work. And Aaron, I thank you so much for helping out today.
Oh, it has been a pleasure. I love working with you because I always learn something different and learn something new. And as educators, we should all be lifelong learners. That's what we should all consistently be doing.
I totally agree. So if you want to get in touch with Aaron, I'll put some information in the description of today's episode. But he is going to be back in the next episode to talk with me about those ethical situations dealing with our personal life. Before we do end, just some reminders, please follow this podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can even rate it. We love some 5 stars. That would be really great out there. Also, check out the newer website, which is schoolhealtheducators.org website. There's a whole bunch of resources for the WISC model, for state and national organizations, as well as resources for skill-based and the topic areas we teach in health education. And the third thing to remember is that you make a difference. You matter. Thank you so much for listening in, and stay well. Thanks again, Aaron.
Thanks.